Welcome back to another OUcast with the Boss Foundation. For those of you joining us for the first time, my name is Andrea Knox. I am an advisor with the Boss Foundation on International Communications and Research. I'm joined today by Dr. Francisca Solisto. She has a long history in animal welfare. As a trained veterinarian, she's worked with Boss in several roles, and today is still an expert consultant with us. Thank you for joining me today to talk about our unreleasable orangutans. Welcome, Siska. How are you?
Hi. I'm good. Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's been a great pleasure to have a chat with you about Boss and orangutans.
I know we're going to talk a lot about the welfare of unreleasable orangutans today, but before we get to that, given the weird situation the world is in, how is your welfare? How are you doing?
Very interesting question.
You don't talk about humans in terms of welfare? Is that a no-no?
No, I think I'm in a good welfare state at the moment. As like all of you, I'm working from home. Actually, I've been working from home since my son was born, and he's 4 now. So basically, I've been working from home long before the pandemic started. It is a great experience. We have to be grateful for everything, but there are some downsides of it. I really want to go back to field working with animals again. But I'm doing whatever I can from home at the moment. And the pandemic, it just sucks. It makes everything delayed, right?
I completely agree. There's no other way to put it. But I'm happy to hear that you're doing well. Your family's doing well. So silver lining. That's what we get. Gets us through the day, right?
Yeah, that's true.
So jumping into the meat of it, could you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, about your history with Boss and what you do today?
I graduated as a veterinarian from Indonesia in, I think, 2007. And then right away, I joined the Boss Foundation at the Nyaro Menteng Center. Served as a veterinarian there for, I think, 5 years. And then I quit, did my master. And then upon returning back home to Indonesia, I started a new position with Boss Foundation again. I think my title was Animal Welfare Coordinator. So I'm kind of expanding my role within the foundation, not just on the veterinary side, but also on the animal welfare side, something that I'm very passionate about. So yeah, I've had great times with Boss Foundation.
I'm thrilled you've been with us for so long and have those fond memories. You have a favorite? I know it's probably hard to pick one with all those years you've worked with Boss and orangutans, but do you have a favorite story that sticks out to you in your mind?
Oh, it's gonna be difficult.
Or a random story. I won't hold you to it being your favorite.
Oh yeah, I think one of the most interesting story will be the fact that the first baby I raised is not my son. So in the past, I've raised, I think, 2 or 3 very young orangutan babies. So they were rejected by their moms. And then, yeah, I was their surrogate mothers for their first month of their life. And it was a great experience. I learned a lot from them. Actually, I learned a lot about raising my son from my experience with orangutan. So, yeah, I tried, you know, when we are working with the orangutans, the primates, we learn to be responsive to them. We learn to understand their cues, how they react, and what do they want without them saying it. And I think it helps a lot with me being a mom at the moment, so I can really be, hopefully, a sensitive mom to my son. Does that make any sense?
No, it does. I'm sure you're a wonderful mom. I've never met your son, as you know. But he's lucky to have you with all your orangutan experience.
I hope so.
I mean, I think anyone who's worked with orangutans can clearly see the similarities with humans and see how it affects their life in a positive way. I hear it time and time again from our supporters and viewers, you know, that they see these moments where orangutans are like people and they're always surprised, and then they understand that they really are just like humans of the forest, orangutans. What was the name of that first orangutan you raised?
Weekly, I think. His name, okay. We named him Wheatley. Is he still in Yarramanteng? I think so, yeah.
I don't know him personally, but with over 300 orangutans there, that's just sure. I don't know all of them. I'll work on that. I will check.
Good.
Maybe by later in this interview, I'll have an answer.
Cool.
Question from the center. We have new information. He is still there.
Cool. Okay.
Thank you for that update. I guess we should, as much fun as that is, talking about our memories, get into the meat of this interview. Yep. Our topic today is about unreleasable orangutans in Boss's care. We talk about it a lot. It's one of our four pillars, offering sanctuary care to orangutans who cannot return to the wild. As much as we would love for every orangutan to go back, we know it's not the reality for all of them. So instead, we just need to give them a high quality of life. Mm. Could you explain to our listeners what keeps an orangutan from being released? What makes them unreleasable?
I suppose there are obvious reasons why orangutans, not all orangutans, cannot be released, right? Some of them may have some significant handicaps, like missing two limbs at least. With only one limb missing, some orangutans, some individuals I've seen, those who have the great drive to survive and they can still go around with not having just one arm or one leg. But if an individual is missing more than one limbs, I think that is a significant challenge for them, and it will be unfair for them to release them. The other reason I think would be that some orangutans, unfortunately, they contract chronic infectious diseases like tuberculosis that unfortunately warrants them not being able to be released in order to not adding the risk of disease transmission to the natural habitat or to the release site where they are going to be introduced. And then the other reason is, again, unfortunately, because they've been in the care of human for too long. So you know that Boss Foundation is caring for hundreds and hundreds of orangutans. And there are times when the rehabilitation and reintroduction process didn't go as smooth as we planned. There are stop-bys every now and then. And as a result, there are several individuals who now have reached their mature age over there. We know that there is something called the window learning period. So young orangutans will have the drive to learn, to explore. But when, as they grow older, like human, they will be less interested in trying new things, trying to learn things. So yeah. We've seen old orangutans who basically we see that it will be a great challenge for them to move to a new environment in their mature age, something like that.
Is there a critical age that you find is the cutoff for that window of learning, or does it really vary by individual?
I think there are a lot to learn in that area. Yeah. I don't think we know much about it, but from what I know, generally, they'll reach adulthood at the age of 12 to 15. So I think at that time, that is in the wild, that is when the female will start to have babies, they'll set up their home range, and the males will already have their position settled within the orangutan population in that area. So I suppose if we release an orangutan age above 15 and they've been in the cage for more than, I don't know, 5-10 years old, I think that would be a significant challenge for them to survive in the wild. What do you think, Andrea? You know more about this than me, I think.
I don't know about that. I mean, I know I agree with you. That young age is so critical for acquisition of learning and skills, like especially, I mean, hypercritical, you know, below the age of 8 or 9 when they'd still be with their mother, that beyond that too, you can see these orangutans continuing to learn, especially release sites. I've seen it firsthand, and then in research as well, seeing orangutans in these preteen and earlier ages being very flexible, having that nice balance of curiosity, but also intelligence not to eat that poisonous fruit, but experiment.
Yep. Yep.
Get into a new food source. So I'd imagine, it'd be very difficult for these older orangutans, not impossible. I've worked with old primates, you know, over the age of 30 who hadn't been trained, and it's harder, but you can train small behaviors, like welfare behaviors and maintenance behaviors, but it is a bigger challenge. So to train an entire, or to stimulate an entire survival skill set is not impossible, but I guess improbable.
Yeah, I suppose it has to do as well with the with how they are cared during their life in the cage or in the rehab centers, right? I suppose they would have better chance of survival in the wild, provided they get the positive stimuli constantly, like getting enrichment, getting new things, they're avoided from boredom, those kind of things. And I think those little things are the ones that at the end of the day will make difference to how an orangutan will survive when they're reintroduced back to the wild.
We throw around the term enrichment so much because it is so important. So to you, is there a specific enrichment that you've found is really helpful in stimulating these orangutans, tips and tricks, or things that also don't work?
I don't think there is one particular type of enrichment that is better off than the rest. I think the factor that it is a new thing is the one that is more important rather than the type of the enrichment. So changing enrichment items routinely is very critical. But there are others, I suppose, like enrichment that promotes orangutans to move around more actively, like providing challenging structures for them to climb or to reach the height. Use something that I really like is flexible support. So like ropes, and then ropes will be on net. I think that is very useful for orangutans to learn that their support is not rigid like cage bars or platform, but it allows them to swing around and to move about in a bit challenging structure.
With that stimulating them to climb and move, I've personally had mixed experience with different individuals. Some who it's easier to get to climb up, other ones, for lack of a better word, kind of are lazy and sit at the bottom of the cage. And I think that's an issue a lot of institutions deal with, us with some individuals, zoos. Is there, in your experience, have you found that to be a big challenge? How do you stimulate them? Do you find with the right climbing structures, they'll naturally start to use them more? Or do you have to kind of encourage that behavior until it becomes normal for them?
Yeah, I think it won't make sense if we expect orangutans to climb about without any particular purpose, right? So I suppose the tricky one is to get them interested in using that structure. So putting things like food items in a very difficult position to reach. And then, I think food will be one of the most effective reward that we can use to get them to be active. But again, living in a cage, it is still living in a cage, and we cannot really provide an environment that will resemble their natural habitat.
I can say none of us here, as you know, want these orangutans in the cages. Unfortunately, that is the situation we're in, right? We don't have enough island space for all of them, and some of them also can't live outside of cages even, that their disabilities stop them from that. Island life would be unsafe. Could you speak to some of those barriers? What sort of orangutans do you think, in your experience, don't do well actually outside the bounds of a cage, as awful as it is, that they need that level of support and security?
It's pretty sad. Actually, whenever we see that an individual or primate cannot live in their natural environment or even outdoor enclosure. But in Boss Foundation, I think there are several who are blind. They're adults. I think all of them are adults who are blind. So naturally, it will be very challenging for them to live outdoor. So I think the current plan is to design a special cage or indoor enclosure that will support their condition, but also, again, provide them with the right stimuli or challenges to keep them mentally and physically active. Something like a dome-shaped cage with lots and lots of structures inside to allow them to climb easily, something like that.
I know we've been talking about these dome cages, these primadomes, for a while, and they're popular in some animal care institutes. I've had the privilege of seeing them firsthand at Center for Great Apes before I was with FOSS, visiting there, and they're wonderful. Do you know, in Indonesia, we've had different issues. Center for Great Apes is based in Florida, those dome cages are on the ground, but here that would contribute to a high parasite load. So you can't have these structures built to the ground. At our centers, all the cages are several meters off the ground. Beyond just this, are there other considerations we need to take into account specific to the environment of Indonesia when designing these specialty cages for orangutans with special needs?
That's a tough question. I think you make a great point with about that having the above ground cages for our situation in Kalimantan and Indonesia in general. Besides that, that's difficult.
We need to consult. Don't worry about it. I'm just curious. We've been talking about these for so long, and there's so many little points you don't think about, right? Like parasites, for one, where they're so important in everything. They hurt us. They're important for orangutans. You have to consider it, but you don't see them. Mm-hmm. So until it comes up, you don't think about it. Yeah. I was wondering, just there were more things I hadn't thought about that maybe you know.
Yeah, I suppose because they are blind and they are in their mature age. So again, their level of curiousness probably not as high as if they are still young. I think that's another significant constraint that we really need to think about in order to increase their welfare stage.
And also for these blind orangutans, are there considerations that need to be made for their social structures? I'm assuming introductions are even more challenging when they can't see each other, read those visual cues, which are just so important for orangutans to communicate.
Within the blind orangutans that we have at FOSS Foundation, there are several who've been to forest school, so they are very familiar with human care. So with these individuals, I think the caretakers or the keepers or the technici can be a really huge enrichment tool for them, so they can interact with the keepers. But there are also individuals who were rescued as adults from the forest, so they are completely wild, and then they get shot or they get cut or whatever, and they get blind, and it's very challenging for them because it's a big change, and I believe they're in a lot of stress. So yeah, I suppose to introduce them to other orangutans will be essential, but definitely has to be done like gradually. So probably not on directly putting them in one cage, but putting them in adjacent cage, provide some sound introduction, like letting them know that there are other orangutans around them. Yeah, it's difficult.
Certainly a challenge. And also, you mentioned how important it is for them to be together and be able to socialize with other orangutans. One question I see that we get a lot on our posts and our videos from people when they see these orangutans in groups in forest school socialization cages, they bring up the fact that orangutans are in the wild, semi-solitary animals. Can you explain why it is important that when in captivity in these specialized cages or whatever situation the individual's in, it is important for them to socialize?
It's a very important term to describe. So orangutans, they probably they are more well known as solitary animals. Definitely they are more solitary than their great ape cousins like chimpanzee and gorilla, but they are not solitary. Actually, they are not solitary at all. They have this very complex social structure within the wild. So I believe that each individual within a forest, say, they know each other. They know who are the other individuals live with them, even though they don't see them as often. So again, in captivity or in sanctuary for the unreleasables, they need the social interaction with each other. And again, human as the caretakers can play a very important role in being their friends within their social structure.
Thank you for clarifying that. I'm sure the question will still come up again, but it's always nice to try to share our knowledge with everyone. I do want to take a couple steps back. So we talked a lot about physical disability to other reasons that orangutans are unreleasable, one of them being disease. And you mentioned chronic diseases, hopefully apparent to a lot of people why you can't release an animal with a chronic disease, both their own, their personal welfare, and the safety of other orangutans in the area. But one of the categories we have for not that makes an orangutan unreleasable as well is ex-tuberculosis. Can you explain why an orangutan who is ex-tuberculosis, not currently suffering from it, is still unreleasable?
Yeah, tuberculosis is obviously one of the major diseases of concern in Great Apes and orangutan conservation. So the current understanding is that tuberculosis is a pathogen that comes from human. So, and in the wild, great apes, chimpanzee, orangutans, gorilla, whatever, they are naive to the pathogen, the Mycobacterium tuberculosis. So obviously what we want to do is to keep them free from the disease, right? And now we have to face the situation that in rehabilitation centers, like in Bos Foundation, there are animals, orangutans, who are infected with tuberculosis. Most of them, they got it when they were kept as a pet elsewhere before they were being rescued into Bos Foundation. We managed to treat them, I think, successfully, but it leaves us with a subpopulation or a group of orangutans who we call as XTB. So they had TB in the past, but they are in good condition at the moment. Now, the challenge is that we cannot really be sure, so there is constraint in diagnosis, that the pathogen or the Mycobacterium is already completely gone from their body and that they cannot get another episode of disease, or we call it relapse. So in human, even in human, relapse cases of tuberculosis is, I'm not going to say often, but it is there. There are people who get tuberculosis the first time, treated, but then after they completed the treatment, for some reason, their immune system got weakened again, and then the TB came back again. So that's the, I think that's one of the specific traits of the Mycobacterium. So we don't want that to happen with orangutans. We don't want the XTB orangutans, when they're released back to the wild, and all of a sudden, for some reason, they get distressed, and then, yeah, the TB reactivate again, and it will be a huge problem for the, not just for the animal, but for the population, the orangutan population, the other primate population, and the whole ecosystem of the wild. So it's, the risk is far higher than the benefit of individual welfare.
So to clarify then, the Mycobacterium that causes tuberculosis, even when an individual's gotten over the worst symptoms, it never does leave their body, does it? It's always there, just in a dormant form?
Yes. And also, like I said, the challenge is in diagnosing it. So we cannot be really sure whether the bacteria is gone or whether is it still dormant or whatever. So latent condition of TB is difficult to diagnose. But yes, you're right that the current understanding is that Mycobacterium is very difficult to be get rid of the body, like 100%.
That's another way they're similar to humans, isn't it? Just thinking back now of all the TB tests I've had to take, and every primatologist has to get that PPD. Too many letters that are sort of PPD skin test. And if you've ever had tuberculosis or the vaccine, it's always positive, right? Even when you're not suffering from it.
Yeah.
Another unfortunate way humans and orangutans are similar that I wish wasn't true.
Yeah, with TB vaccination, if you want to talk about it a little bit more, as you said, once a human is vaccinated with BCG vaccine, then the PPD test will not be useful for them. So that is another reason why orangutans are not vaccinated against tuberculosis, because first, we are not sure if the vaccine is indeed effective in orangutans to protect them from the disease. And also, it will kind of mix up the diagnostic tests.
That makes sense. Testing is difficult enough. Mm. No reason to complicate it further. Even if it was effective, the vaccines, right? We could be vaccinated every orangutan we released. They would still have children who were not immune to tuberculosis. So it would still present a huge risk. Happy thoughts. All these orangutans who can't go back.
Happy thoughts. I think Bos Foundation is doing a great job with not so fortunate for the orangutans, but yeah, again, weighing the benefit and the risk, I think Bos Foundation is doing a good job in first we managed to diagnose those individuals who got TB in the first place, and then we managed to treat them effectively. I think at the moment, the number is something at 40 individuals who are called XTB group, but there are that they are living happy and healthy in Samboja Lestari and Inya Rumenteng. And our next challenge with POS Foundation and other orangutan conservation effort is to keep them happy in the cage or in outer enclosure where they can live as orangutans, but not necessarily in the wild.
From working with BOSS and your time associated with BOSS, what would you identify as the greatest threat or really the biggest issue that makes the majority of orangutans in BOSS Foundation's care unreleasable?
I think tuberculosis will be in the top list. And then significant handicap, like we discussed, also old age. And also there is this, we call it orangutan respiratory disease syndrome, which is a chronic respiratory disease caused by mostly by bacterial infection. And for some reason, orangutans are different to chimpanzee or gorilla or bonobos. Orangutans are really susceptible to like developing this bacterial infection within their respiratory systems into a chronic condition. So we did a research, kind of research about this. We collaborate with zoo vets from the US and also a human pulmonologist from the US. And we try to understand these syndromes. In BOSS Foundation centers, in both Nyi Rumenteng and in Samboja Lestari, there are individuals who get respiratory infection quite often, and it relapses and it's going on again and again. The easiest symptom will be air sacculitis or infection in their air sac, and it's very difficult to get rid of. You open the sac on a surgery with a surgical procedure, and then you clear up the pus and all the bad stuff inside the sac, give antibiotics, the orangutans got better. But then after a few months, after a few years, they will get it again and again. It's a condition that affects not only orangutan in BOSS or in other centers in Indonesia, but also in zoos in Europe and in US, North America. So we did this research about this syndrome and we call it ORDS, Orangutan Respiratory Disease Syndrome. Like I said, in BOSS Foundation, there are several individuals that we considered of having ORDS. And due to that chronic condition, we decided that they cannot be released.
Is that for their own personal welfare they can't be released, or is it because it's contagious?
It is because of personal welfare, because I think it will be unfair if we release animals who we know they may get another episode of respiratory disease in the wild. And also, there is a hypothesis that is being researched that this condition is caused by some genetic factor. One of the major predisposing factor that make an orangutan get this chronic infection is if they have a mother or a father who already had that disease before. So it's something that we think related to genetics. So obviously one would say that if an orangutan with this syndrome, probably it's better if they do not have offsprings that would probably later get the same disease. They're not contagious like tuberculosis.
So I'm gonna ask a question from my personal experience here. Do you know what sets off this disease? Like I've actually seen the symptoms manifest in an individual a year and a half after she was released to a forest. So she wasn't living in a cage and never didn't have a history of it either. Mother didn't have it as far. Yeah, mother has no history either because she was in her care. Do we know what causes it?
No, we do not really know what causes it. That's why we call it a syndrome. The current hypothesis is that orangutans in the wild, they do not have this, probably because of their arboreal lifestyle. Probably they are indeed more prone to pathogens that are found in the ground or something like that. It needs a lot of research on the disease.
So in that case, if we think we don't know that it might be related to pathogens on the ground and arboreal lifestyle helped prevent it for an orangutan who has a family history of it, like their mother had air sacculitis, but let's say they were in the wild and living completely in the trees, do you think, I know we're speculating a lot here, but do you think they would be unlikely to develop it still, or will that genetic link potentially handicap them?
I'm not sure. I mean, a disease expression is a combination of genetic or the human, the host situation.
and also the environment where it lives, right? So there's got to be a balance between a genetic or a kind of anatomical anomaly or something like that, that will make an individual more prone to a disease, and also the environment where it lives, whether it's clean, whether it's dirty, whether it's exposed to chronic stress or something like that. I think it's a combination of both the inside of the animal or human and the outside environment.
I'm going to stay optimistic on that one. The wild-born generations are a little bit safer. Releasing orangutans, they're never going to be completely wild when they've been rehabilitated. I mean, I don't think any of us would be, right? If we went through the same thing that orangutans went through, if we wouldn't be ourselves. But their kids will be more normal, then their grandkids will be wild orangutans.
Like, yeah,
truly. Yeah. That's what I dream about. A couple of decades down the line when we have more generations, not a quick process, but something to stay hopeful for. And we talked about this chronic respiratory disease being a huge issue within BOSS Foundation. And you mentioned this is a topic of international research. Would you say this is the biggest issue facing orangutan captivity in general, or is that something else entirely?
I wouldn't say this is the biggest issue, but it is definitely a significant issue. Referencing from a scientific paper that I've read before, yeah, it says that in European zoos as well as in North American zoos, there are about 20% of the captive population are infected with this disease. So it is this syndrome. So it is definitely a significant issue.
I'm going to trust the science on this, that one day we'll know more, because I know a lot of very intelligent and very motivated people, yourself included, are working on this and working towards answers. So another thing to hope for. Which, speaking of hope, let's change this conversation. Let's talk about the future. Let's talk about positive things. I want to ask you a very, very important question. What hope is there for unreleasable orangutans? You've mentioned we can still give them a high quality of life in captive care. Is there any chance that some of them can still be released? If not, what can we do besides primadomes for blind orangutans to give them a good future?
Yeah, I think speaking of hope, I think we should always hope for the best. And I realize that knowledge changes, people finding new things from the latest research and stuff. So yeah, I suppose one day if, for example, the orangutans who have been in the cage for too long, they've become old, but then one day we put them in a kind of outdoor enclosure or small island and they seem like doing fine, and then they look better, they look more fit and stuff like that. Probably we can challenge them, say, even more by putting them in one of our natural river islands in Nyarumenteng. And we can see from there. I mean, it's going to be a long process, a gradual process, to compare the current pre-release requirement for the young ones is if they be able to spend 1 year in pre-release islands with minimal support from human, right? So probably if we give these older ones a longer adaptation period, say in pre-release islands, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, or whatever, and we don't put as many individuals in the island or in the enclosure so that they do not compete as strongly as with the young ones, who knows, eventually they'll be able to be released. Or if that doesn't happen, then we can be pretty sure that they are better off, they are happier in these natural islands. And I think that's one of the main goal of BOSS's strategy with unreleasable orangutans. Yeah, we aim to put them outside of the cage with whatever we can and provide them with the environment that is as natural as they can provide.
That is definitely something to hope for. I do just want to clarify something for people listening, because I know you and I look at these reports a lot from the islands. We're so used to it, we may have glossed over a detail about how we evaluate these orangutans, both releasable and unreleasable. We're hoping for the best. It's not just 1 year on the island, but we do watch their behavior and record that, and we can actually, yeah, we put it into categories of if they're doing well and acting like wild orangutans, or doing mediocre or actually doing poorly, you know, a red category, and not just making it for the year, right?
It's sure, yeah.
Well, acting like a wild orangutan, not just relying on others and stealing food from other orangutans and bullying technicians into extra snacks or things and sitting on the ground all day. Actually need to, yeah, show that they can be a wild orangutan, right?
Yeah, sure. Definitely. Yeah.
You mentioned also the sanctuary islands, which that is a huge dream of ours, right? Every orangutan who can be out from a cage, even if they can't be in a wild forest, get to be out from a cage in a controlled environment. For us, sanctuary islands. Can you talk a little bit about what this looks like, what this future looks like for them?
Yeah, so what we call sanctuary islands is basically a natural river island. So islands that are located in the middle of the river. As you know, Borneo, Kalimantan, it's very famous of huge rivers, and there are islands in the center of it, several islands. And we see that it is, as you said, it is a relatively more controlled environment rather than jungle out there. So Bos Foundation in Nyaru Menteng, we've had 5 different islands. 4 of them are being used as pre-release islands. So you can say there are training islands for orangutans who are going to be released eventually. And there's one island, it is Salat Island, that is dedicated as a sanctuary island. So for orangutans who have slim chance of being released, and they will get support, they get food provision, they will be checked by our keepers. Yet they are always in a good environment, I suppose.
When you say slim chance of being released, so is this just for orangutans who don't have the survival skills, or can we put orangutans there who have chronic respiratory disease or extratuberculosis?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's difficult. Yes, now we're talking about the chance for the orangutans with tuberculosis and with the chronic respiratory syndrome. I say it again that knowledge will change, right, over time. But at the moment, I think personally, it will be wiser to put the ones with chronic respiratory syndromes in the cage, unfortunately, because they still need routine treatment. They need daily treatment of getting their oral drugs as well as their nebulization drugs. They need it daily, unfortunately, so they cannot be put in islands. As for the tuberculosis, the ex-tuberculosis ones, yeah, it will be difficult. I mean, as long as they are in a good, healthy condition and they are kept in a good environment, there'll be small chance of they get reactivated tuberculosis. But again, being in natural island, I think there are some obvious challenges of being able to observe them or monitor them on a routine basis. And I think it has to be checked on a case by case, on individual medical history and individual physical condition in order to try to put them in the sanctuary islands for the XTB ones.
Oh, very good points. Also made me realize, I think we took another point for granted, that we thought everyone knew it. And when we say sanctuary islands, these aren't like small islands that you see at a zoo. The Salat Island cluster, we have a couple islands there in the sanctuary one, Barak Ketchiu, small rhinoceros, still 104 hectares. So it's not always easy to find these orangutans.
Yeah, exactly. When we talk about the river islands, it's not 1 hectare, 2 hectares, 10 hectares. It's over 50 hectares, even up to 100 hectares. So yeah, it's a very good environment for the orangutans. And it's still relatively small compared to their home range in the wild, but it is still very challenging to observe them on a daily basis, especially if we know that they have some handicaps with their physical condition.
I agree. This is all something to hope for. As much as I wish we could release all the orangutans back to the wild, I know we do everything we can to give them a high quality of life. I do want to let you go soon, but there's always one last question I like to ask our guests. Right now, most people listening to this are not primatologists, they're not animal caregivers, they're not as crazy as us, right? They haven't, not as orangutan crazy as us, and decided to dedicate every waking moment to this. But what can these listeners do to help reduce the issue of unreleasable orangutans? If there's one message you could climb on top of a mountain and scream and be heard around the world, what would that be?
Oh gosh, I need to write it down. I have so many things in my head, but I need to.
I mean, you could scream a lot of messages. It's fine. We don't have a time limit. You're a busy woman, but we can stay here for a while. I'm happy. I think it's fascinating. I'll listen all day.
Yeah, I suppose for the people who are not directly working with orangutan conservation, if you can read as much as you can, you find out as much as you can about these unreleasable orangutans. They're not only in Bos Foundation, they're in many other centers in Sumatra, in West Kalimantan, Central Kalimantan, East Kalimantan, wherever, there are these unreleasable orangutans. And I think one of the
biggest challenge in real life world with caring for these unreleasable orangutans is getting the money, the funding to keep them lifelong. And it's challenging for both foundation and other centers. So yeah, read a lot about them and donate when you can, because your donation means a lot for these individuals. And as they are going to be with us, with human for the rest of their life, we can highlight their personalities, for example. There's one particular blind orangutan in Nyaru Menteng who is very dear to me. Her name is Keke. She started in Nyaru Menteng way before me. So she joined Nyaru Menteng. She was rescued before I joined Nyaru Menteng. But when I work in Nyaru Menteng with her, she is one of the sweetest personality. She's very sweet. And she is smart. Actually, she joined up to forest school too, which is like the advanced stage of forest school where adolescent orangutan, so age like 8-9 years old, are cared for. So obviously they range more, they travel more in the forest, and Keke is particularly smart. So she would travel far and wide, but she always returned home safe. But yeah, eventually it was her blindness that made us decided that it is better for her to stay in cage. And it broke my heart. I
it's hard, but it's because you care so much that you're so amazing at this. And she's so lucky to have you and people like you who care about her.
Yeah, so back to what can we do with them. First of all, they are as amazing as the healthy orangutans, and they have personalities, and I think they will be a great ambassador for the species, right? And it will be a challenge for Post Foundation and other centers to showcase that these unreleasable orangutans are still living a healthy life, a happy life, and they can support their species in other ways.
Yeah, we can support greater orangutan conservation, they can have good lives. I can confirm Keke is still in Nyaru Menteng.
Yes,
in a good life. You know, Keke is an ambassador for her entire species, but also, yeah, for every blind orangutan. It can't go back to the wild at all, because it's not only Keke, it's others. And they're all individuals with unique personalities who deserve a future. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's been an absolute pleasure to speak with you. But I hope in some future we get to see each other again and work in person again.
Sure. Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me. It's been a blast of my life working with Post Foundation. And yeah, I think one last thing. Post Foundation is doing a great job in starting to be more focused on these unreleasable individuals, because over my time working with BOS, I've seen, you know, like the shift of focus within the foundation. When I started in 2007, we worked really hard to rescue as many as possible because of the forest fire, because of the wild trade and stuff. And then moving forward, we struggled really hard to get really sites to reintroduce orangutans. And then we managed to do that. We release hundreds and hundreds of orangutans. And now we change again. Now we look at individuals who cannot be released, and it's time to really think in the long run. It's most likely that at the end, Post Foundation will be a sanctuary, an orangutan sanctuary, when all the individuals have been released and we get to work with these amazing individuals with their specialties. So yeah, I think Post Foundation is really progressing. So thank you for having me.
Thank you for your support of the orangutans, their welfare and their conservation.
Thanks.
For listeners who want to know more about unreleasable orangutans and BOS Foundation's work, please check us out on social media. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, or look to our website at orangutan.or.id. Thanks for joining us for this OUcast. See you next time.